And obviously every situation dictates, but I think a lot of fear, people succumb to that and it leads them to staying in their house, not putting in that job application, not trying to transfer to something they want, not taking a risk to start a business, not take a risk to try a new workout routine or try a diet or whatever it may be. I think they're afraid because of the unknown. And if people don't understand, if it's out there, if we know about it, chances are someone's done it before us. So it's not like it can't be done.
You trying to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. And well, we got a good one for you today. This is a road that we go down a lot. High-level military, real cool shit, real cool stories. You've probably heard of him before. But if you haven't, let me introduce Eddie Penny, and he'll give you a little bio of who he is. And of course, I'm sure it's going to be the most humble bio ever in history, but I can promise you he's a bad motherfucker. So we typically, the fucking tier one, fucking special forces, special teams guys are like, yeah, I did a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But let's go on to my lollipop business. And I'm like, no, hold on a second. You guys are fucking insane, savage human beings. Let's talk about some of that shit too. But anyway, Eddie Penny, what's up, man? Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Who had the lollipop business? I'm kind of like stuck on that now.
actually, three guys from Green Beret. No, I'm just kidding. Nobody.
All right. So just a little background. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps and then I switched over to the Navy and did the SEAL thing. I retired after 20 years. When I got to the SEAL teams, I went to SEAL Team 2, did a couple deployments there. Then I went across the street to our Tier 1 unit, which is SEAL Team 6 or Development Group. Did a few deployments over there. And then I did a training detachment for my last couple of years when I got custody of my children. Once I got out or on the way of getting out, I started a company, Contingent Group, which is a risk mitigation firm specializing in security safety for businesses, business owners, individuals and families that are traveling or just whatever they've got going on. We kind of customize our security based on the assets that they have. Recently, just wrote a book, Unafraid, Staring Down Terror as a Navy SEAL and a Single Dad. And I also, with my wife, have Unafraid brand, which is clothing. Started out as T-shirt. It's kind of morphing into who knows what. But that's where we kind of sit right now.
It's interesting that we were just going over. We have a group in this organization called the Street Cop Survivors Club. So essentially, I don't know how many there are today, but probably about 190 men and women in law enforcement who found this club on Facebook. It's a group that I created for them. And they were significantly injured in the line of duty. So either shot or in a horrific car crash, some crazy shit like that. I say this thing, I've been saying it for years. I actually want to get it on the wall in here, but it's now become the logo of their first shirt that'll be sold in Nashville at our conference in 2 weeks. And the saying is, although I have fear, I am not afraid. So it's very interesting how it ties into Unafraid. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing. I think everybody has fear, but how do you conquer that? How do you find yourself being unafraid?
Yeah, that's the whole thing, man. We all get faced with it based off of whatever it is. But I think the difference is, do you hold on to that fear? Is that going to dictate your choices? Is that going to dictate your mindset? Or are you going to be like, okay, that kind of stinks and I'm going to go attack it? And obviously every situation dictates, but I think a lot of fear, people succumb to that and it leads them to staying in their house. Not putting in that job application, not trying to transfer to something they want, not taking a risk to start a business, not take a risk to try a new workout routine or try a diet or whatever it may be. I think they're afraid because of the unknown. And if people don't understand, if it's out there, if we know about it, chances are someone's done it before us. So it's not like it can't be done. And it's kind of like, hey, let's just go. And you know, everyone's afraid of the F word, the failure, and failure is never final. It's not the end of you. And those failures, we get lessons out of them. And it's not like we're going to go out and try to fail, but I mean, I can count numerous failures that I've had in my business just by honestly winging it, shooting it from the hip, didn't do the things the greatest way, but you know, over a decade later, I'm happy with where I am. But a lot of there's a lot of failures in there, a lot of mistakes, a lot of what the heck was I thinking? But it just makes you stronger. It gets a better mindset. I'm like, okay, let's not do this again. And maybe pull wisdom from guys that have, you know, gone before me. So I think we all face that fear, but it's like, are you going to be big brothered by it? Or are you going to rise up and, you know, breach that obstacle? It's on you. It's on that mindset.
In your mind, how does fear and pain tolerance correlate?
I don't think I associate pain. Are we talking physical, emotional, or just all the above?
I think all the above, right? So you run a business 10 years, you've been doing business, and people don't realize. I was talking to a guy yesterday. He said, I was talking to my pool guy, right? So he's like, you don't seem like you're doing too bad. I fucking hit the like button on your Instagram and shit all the time. I go, yeah, we're, you know, but Tim, it's about the level of pain you're willing to endure. And again, sometimes it's physical, but a lot of times it's the mental and emotional side of things that we talk about fear and be able to control that. So maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of the pain or what we're talking about, the fear, is a lot of it is we bring it on ourselves. And I'll just use, because you just use media, I'll just use this as an example, is I'll use posting, for example. Very ridiculous, but a lot of people are afraid to post because they are afraid of the comments that come back from that. Well, the deal is you're not going to make everyone happy. Someone, no matter what you post, whatever it is, they are not going to be happy. They're going to have a different view, and that's okay. That's okay to have a different view, different opinion. Not everyone can respond in a mature way. I think we've learned that over the years of media and just by living. But it shouldn't stop you from being you and believing in what you believe in. Obviously, as long as it's on the righteous side of things. But you know, we can help ourselves out by, okay, don't look at the comments, or something so simple that just kind of turns that mindset. I was just talking to a guy that I'm helping encourage through some certain things right now. And he was just kind of like, I'm really scared. He literally used the word scared, talking about fear here, about where the world is going right now. And I'm like, what are you going to do about it? You are choosing to go see what is going on. And the truth is, we really can't trust all the things that we see on media, on the mainstream media, on new, whatever it is. We can't trust a lot of the stuff. And I was like, man, like, let's do an experiment. Let's take some of that out of your life and see how it changes your mindset. Because one comment, I could post something up there. And I know this is a little tribal thing to talk about the post, but we were on the subject. Is I could post something up, I could get 100 awesome attaboys. That's awesome. I agree with this. And then one negative comment, and the human nature is going to hug that negative comment and ruin my day, where 100 others were saying, good job, that was awesome, I can't believe you did this, or I agree with your point of view. So why do it to yourself? And that feeds into the fear. We feed ourselves this crap a lot of the times when we could take it out.
I think that media diets are significantly important. And
100%.
And I mean the sense of, especially a news diet. So don't get so entrapped and engulfed in this thing. Unfortunately, even if you're going on social media for a righteous cause or for the right reasons to connect with your friends, because people will demonize social media and it's the root of all evil. I've got to be honest with you. I think there's a really good side to social media.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? I built this company on the back of Facebook. No bullshit.
I agree with you.
So yeah, there's a lot of good resources out there, but you know, you've got to have the self-discipline to understand and probably the intelligence as well, to recognize that not everything you see, there's a saying that I think everybody knows, it's believe none of what you hear, half of what you see.
Right.
It's a real, these things exist, these idioms exist for a reason. If you start really unpacking, they make a lot of sense. And to piggyback off of what you said, I went to an event years ago. I was in real estate and it was called Agent 2021. Gary Vaynerchuk put it on and it was at the Dolphin Stadium in Miami. And Andy Frisella, who a lot of people are familiar with, but when he came out and did a talk to everybody, as he was contracted to do, he said, you know, I just don't understand why everybody in this room is worried about the 50% of people that don't like you, when you should be caring only about the 50% of people that love you. So, dude, I say this all the time and I give the quote where it's due, is, bro, I'm not worried about people that don't believe in what we're doing. If I spent time, energy, and effort on those motherfuckers trying to convince the unconvincible, I would be serving nobody. Mm-hmm. And it alludes to this Winston Churchill saying that I like, and I just pulled it up on my phone. That's what I was doing. And it says, you'll never reach your destination if you stop and throw stones at every dog that barks.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
You know, so I people have to understand, you have to learn how to shun the non-believers. Mm-hmm. It's not, nobody makes something for everybody. It's impossible. You have to learn how to say, it's just not for you. We got people come to the conference. I know for a fact, our conference is pretty big. This year we have, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of 1,700, give or take, coming to our conference in 2 weeks. I'm aware of people who are coming who don't like my company, but they're coming because it's Nashville and they got a free ticket to go. I honestly don't, if they become a believer when they get there, great. But I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't care. I'm not there to try to say to myself, hey, Dennis, how do you make these people like you in this opportunity? Hey, man, this is who we are. Don't disturb everybody else's shit. There was a story, and Zig Ziglar talked about it, and he's another person that he's the really grandfather of, like, how to do things and become somebody. But I've watched some of our instructors go and teach, and they're focusing, I've done it myself, on the guy or girl who is yawning or on their phone, which is rare now in this stage of the game for us. But I'm like, why are you giving them any energy? All these other people came here to hear the best version of you today. They wanted you. So be a professional and learn how to ignore those people who are not understanding what your message is. There are things going on behind the scenes in their world that you don't even know. So they're getting their butt kicked somewhere. You got to acknowledge that.
Yes.
Don't take it so personally. Anyway. So, dude, I don't know if you want to talk to anything that I just said there before I move on to the next thing, because I do want to go back a little bit into where you grew up, how you end up in the military, how you made the transition from Marine Corps to Navy, shit like that. And just because I'm curious myself.
Yeah, go for it. Let's go on back.
I saw you ask the fucking question. Shoot. So that's the question I had, dude. Like, where did you grow up? How did you get enticed to go into the military? What, I don't say enticed. Like, when did you make that decision of like, yeah, dude, I'm fucking, this is who I'm going to be.
Got you. I was born and raised in Cincinnati, and I was there until I was 17. I always loved the films, you know, like the Rambos and the Arnold shows. I want to be them. I wanted to have the muscles. I just wanted to get the bad guys. It just intrigued me. I went to a Cincinnati Reds game with my mother. It was a night game, and it was during the Desert Storm time, sort of the 90-91, I think it was. And at the end of the Star Spangled Banner, you know, you put your hand over your heart and we're standing, and jets flew over, and just like the rumble of the engines just like rocked my world. I was like, okay, I want to go do that. Not so much the pilot piece, but just the military piece. And just like the patriotism that was there, like it was just banners everywhere, support our troops. There was the eagle head, the red, white, and blue. They had the five. I mean, it was just like, it was so cool. It was like all these, my little eyes, what I captured was everyone was supporting these guys that are overseas in a place that I knew nothing about, fighting a war or battle or whatever that I knew nothing about. But I could see they were treated the way that they were, people acted on the whole situation. I liked it. I'm like, what are they doing over there? It seems so important. I'm going to go do that. That's just what I did. And obviously, like certain movies just made it go. And then a good friend of mine that I swam with in high school, he went to Marine Corps boot camp a year before me. And I went to his graduation with his family. And I went down there, saw like the drill field, the obstacle course, and just kind of the barracks and the whole situation. I just like fell in love. I don't know why looking back now, but I did. And so that's where I went. And did 4 years there. And it just wasn't exactly what I wanted. I wanted to go to sniper school. I failed out of it. Or not didn't fail out of it. I couldn't even get in because my shooting score wasn't good enough. So I went and I missed it by 1 point three different times. And I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't meant to be. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go back to Cincinnati. I'll be a cop. And you know, my military time is done with. And I don't know. Oh, I went to, we did this because I was at Quantico, Virginia, and all the training we did was for officers. There was nothing for us. It was like, we were little dummies out in the field to help with their training. And we went to West Virginia, did this mountaineering like a 3-day course before these guys got there so we could teach them, because we knew nothing about this stuff. So we went out a couple of days before to learn everything. And it was like the first time, like it was about me learning something. And I ate it up. I was like, dude, this is so awesome. And I was realizing like the only way I'm going to get more of this is kind of do a special forces of some sort. And so I just kind of like was my original dream back when I was a kid was the SEALs. Just because I thought they looked cool with the scuba stuff and all that jazz. So I went and rest is history, man. Just went over and then military for me for 20.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Marine Corps, then you're 4 years in the Marines. You're like, I want to go fucking Special Forces. Why didn't you go Special Forces Marine Corps? Are you trying to be tier one guy? Is that why?
Well, they had, at the time, they weren't under. So it's about, I was finding out about the funding, like this funding goes to this unit, this funding can go to this unit. And at the time, I don't think MARSOC, which is their Special Forces, didn't have anything. They just, and it's the Marine Corps. They pride themselves on, we can get everything done with this stick. And the government's like, okay, cool, we'll just give all the money to everyone else, which they kind of, you know, they shoot themselves in the foot. But when I left and went over to the Navy, they just joined SOCOM and got like a huge funding, but which is fine. I wanted to do the SEAL thing. They still have way more funding. And I didn't really even know about the tier one unit until I was at BUDS and I found out about it. I was like, okay. And then right then and there, as soon as I heard about it, I was like, yeah, I'm going there. That's all there is to it. I'm not stopping until I get to the top.
That's awesome. I'm not going to be the cliche. Tell me about BUDS, bro.
there's tons of books about it.
You know what, dude? We have so many operators on this program. So many that I know what the cliche. I've already read the Goggins books. I've heard the stories. I'm not going down the road of, do you like David? Do you not like David? Listen, the guy, it is what it is. I'm a fan and I'll leave it at that.
I know David.
Okay. So, you know, listen, I respect anybody. I mean, people are just so easy. There's that Babe Ruth saying, and I don't know, I'm the fucking saying guy today, is the loudest boos come from the cheapest seats. Mm-hmm. You know, you ever hear that one? So Anybody who wants to criticize anybody who's done things like this, what the fuck have you done? You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck have you done? You're going to start criticizing anybody. Oh, he wasn't tier one. He was tier. Like, okay. Like, who the fuck are you, dude? There was a video that came out recently. There was a guy playing basketball, some major, major leaguer fucking basketball NBA guy. And he's like yelling at somebody in the audience. He's like, bitch, you're not even out here on the court. You're fucking yelling me what I'm supposed to do. He's like, how come I'm on the court and you're not? And he started arguing with a fan. And I'm like, I understand exactly what he's saying. Cause dude, just like you, me, anytime we decide to do something that's a little extraordinary, you're going to be criticized. You're going to suffer criticisms. Recently, we had Mike Glover on. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got very upset with that. So people were talking shit on Instagram. And I'm like, yo, listen, why don't you come on the podcast? And they're like, no, I don't want to do that. And I can't, like, because of this. And I'm like, yeah, of course, right? Mm-hmm. You're a real tough guy behind the scenes. But
there's so many of those guys.
I think it alludes back to like, stop worrying about all this pushback and shit,
man.
And at the same time, people are upset about Mike Glover being on here. I'm like, first of all, there is no reason for all of you to be getting up, or it's a handful of you. Let me just say something else. My brother-in-law is like, yo, is he really coming to your conference? And I'm like, yeah, Mike's coming. He's like, can I hang out with him? I'm like, yeah, you can fucking hang out with him, dude. He's like, it's fucking sick. Right. So I think there are people who don't like me and they just don't understand anything about me, or maybe they've ingested 30 seconds of my behavior and the way that I talk and my jerseyness, and they get a complete misconception of my mission is, and they cast judgment. So I think we're all subjected to that at some point.
Oh, of course. It goes back to what you said. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes in someone's life, and how can you judge someone based off of 30 seconds or just an hour conversation? You don't know anything about them. It's mind boggling. It is mind boggling. That is just insecurity at its best right there.
You know, I think the best thing we can do as human beings is to ourselves not cast judgment. You know, I try to really, before I make any comments or regards or remarks, I try to understand what the other person is going through mentally. Where are they at? Right. Why are they acting like this? What's the pressure? Where are they getting their butt kicked? Where are they not being seen, heard, and validated that they have to behave in this manner? And guess what, dude? I've been that person before, you know, I think we all have. I think it's maturity comes with time.
I believe you're right.
What did you like the most about the military? What did you dislike the most about the military?
I like most is the camaraderie, the brotherhood. I really like that. That was awesome. Feeling a part of a team. That was probably the best. That's the first thing that's jumping out. Not liking so much is the fallout after you leave and you can't operate anymore. That's what I don't like the most. All the bad habits that you pick up, the addictions, things you're trying to break away and not do anymore and just be a better person. I guess you can say not, you know, going from savage mode to I have a family. I need to concentrate on them. It's not about me. That's been very hard. And that's, I don't like that piece because it takes a lot of hard work.
Yeah, dude. I think a lot of people, and again, how am I comparing a tier one operator, literally the elite of the elite? You guys are the top. There's nothing above SEAL Team 6
Delta.
Yeah, Delta Force. My apologies. Yeah, Delta Force. I mean, no disrespect, but I couldn't remember Delta Force for a second. My bad. We just had like two Delta guys on last week on the podcast. So good fucking dudes. They're actually coming to our conference as well, which is awesome. But, you know, I'd imagine that you're just in this mindset so focused because you have to be, because the missions are so high profile, so dangerous. How do you switch on and off from that to being a daddy?
See, that's where I had I think a lot of us, I can obviously speak for myself and obviously what I know from close friends is it's easy to go overseas when you're doing something that you're passionate about. There's really just one thing you gotta like, okay, don't die and just do your job that you've been training for years and years and years, repetition after repetition, that's savage mode. Then you come home. And there's these mundane tasks like take out the trash, the car needs this, you know, we got to go to this school play, dinner needs to do this. And you it's like they seem so petty, but I don't know what it is. It is like one of the most strenuous annoyances ever. At least that's what I experienced. I'm like, it was just too much. So you retract, you suppress with drinking, pills. Other things to keep your mind off of the reality of what's going on. And really your mind's overseas. At least that's what I found. It was very hard to do with that is to be emotionally, back to that emotion piece, to be emotionally available for my family. I had a very hard time. I'm still working through that right now is finding out what feelings are, emotions. I mean, just a few years ago, I actually like started crying. I should be. I just never did. It was like, boom, like nothing. I don't have time for it. And it's not the way to do, because the truth is that job was awesome. That lifestyle was not so much awesome at the time. It seemed awesome. It was a job, but it comes with a lot of baggage, If you man up and be like, hey, I'm not doing this the right way. And you got to go tackle it. Like how to deal with your family, how to treat people with respect and not thinking you're so Joe Cool, because you're not. You're just a dude that had some cool training and some cool optics. That's hard, man. That was hard. It was very hard. It was all about me. And now it should be about, the whole time it should be about my family. And it never was when I was serving. And now it's like, I'm done with that stuff. But it's difficult to swallow pride and be emotionally available, which I have had struggles with and has had to work through that by reading books, talking to people, counselor after counselor, therapist after therapist, working on my emotional, spiritual, physical, and mental health as much as I possibly can to better myself.
Hats off to you, bro, right? You're at least acknowledging it and taking action to put it into play for your kids.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. I think it speaks volumes of who you are as a father. You know, listen, I emphasize this, and people don't know this, before we went live here, Eddie and I were having a conversation. I recommended this book to him, and I'd like to put it out publicly because I bought the audio version. I have 4 hours left on it. I'm chapter 5 right now. And for anybody who has kids, it's a good read. So don't think it's not for you because you don't have kids, because it teaches you how not to be a fucked up parent. And I'm telling you, you really want to invest that energy now to being a great parent, so your kids can thrive in life. And that's really a big investment in domino effect, because then they're going to be great parents as well. And it's called Adult Children of Emotionally Immature Parents, How to Heal from Distant, Rejecting, or Self-Involved Parents by Lindsay Gibson. This was given to me by somebody. And, you know, I went, okay, you know what? I've had it in my Audible account for a while because I listen to audiobooks. And dude, once I turned it on, I came back from Florida a couple of days ago. I was like, this shit's really good. If you're focusing on, you know, being a great dad, my hat's off to you. It's so important to put that energy towards it. But I can't emphasize how good this book is, dude. I'm telling you, grab this one. You're going to really like it, dude. It's going to help you.
Yeah. I'm going to add another one. Parenting with Love and Logic. Have you heard of that one?
No, I'm writing it down.
That's a good one too, man. Like two chapters in, I'm like, okay, I need to reevaluate the way I parent.
But dude, like the fucking good, energy, man, and effort that you're putting, the conscious decision to be a great dad, it's so fucking admirable in a society where, dude, I mean, I meet some of these dads and they're just like, I just want to go drink somewhere by myself. And I'm like, is it that bad?
That's sad, right, man? That's sad. They just don't want to deal with it. That's the difference. That is the difference of not dealing with the fear and succumbing to it. They'd rather, I mean, I hear you, like drinking. Yeah, I got it. I was there for a long, long time. And I'm like, dude, no more. Like, this isn't like those kids leave. And what are they going to say about you? You should be shaping little leaders. We question this country. Okay, cool. It starts in the home. What are you doing in your piece of the puzzle? What are you doing? I mean, ask yourself, it's not them. Don't do that. It starts at the house. If you're not doing your job, what do you have no right to talk, period.
People need to realize being physically present and being mentally present are two very different things. And
100%.
I got to give credit to my uncle who passed away. He was actually the best person in our family. He died suddenly. And his daughter is my cousin. She is working down the hall right now. But I don't know if there's a person in my family that I appreciated more besides my grandmother, but on a different level than my uncle. Because when he came over, you knew it was time to put sneakers on, grab the fucking wiffle ball bat. You know, we don't come from like a wealthy background or anything like that. And, or like get the fucking Sega Genesis ready or the Nintendo ready. And this dude spent zero time with the adults and spent every minute with the kids. And I've really learned a lot of lessons from him after he's passed. And now that I'm a father myself, bro, I go to a party, you know, 50, 60, 80, 100 people in a backyard. You're not going to find me at the bar with the rest of the moms and dads sucking down fucking scotch. Bro, I'm playing football. I'm in the pool. I'm throwing kids, to my detriment at times, because when you're the fun dad and there's 28 kids who think you're the funnest dad there's ever been in life, mm-hmm, and they want to like beat the shit out of you nonstop, which is funny. But like after like 48 minutes, I'm just like, guys, I need a break. And then like, I'm trying to sit down and like have some water and maybe a hamburger, and they're like dumping ice down my back. Yeah. And sometimes I ask the parents, I'm like, hey, can you guys just like not do shots for a second? And just like, can you just tell your kids to give me like a 5-minute breather? I'm trying to be really nice about it. I'm like, guys, Dennis needs a 5-minute breather. Like, just please, you know. And I take pride in that, dude. And I really try to enjoy the moment. And I'm not willing to wash that away with booze. Mm-hmm. Just not.
Yeah.
Just not. Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well. I think it's fucking awesome that here you are, this tier one operator, you know, and coming on a podcast, 500,000 subscribers, probably a fuck ton of them are cops and military. And we're talking about the things that are never talked about, you know, how to be present as a parent when you're a cop, first responder, or a military person. Now, what do you tell guys and girls about your experiences to help them better be better family members?
Yeah, I'm the biggest hypocrite there is, because before I got my kids, I was the drinker. I was the stay away. Like, mom's got the kids, whatever it is, I don't need to be there. I'll pay my, because at the time during the separation, I thought that I was just going to do the 50-50 or whatever it is, but I would pay my money like, hey, I did my job. And I have a totally different view now. I'm like, man, for like single parents out there, I mean, I'm remarried now. We have a blended family and I'm very happy. But when I was alone by myself with those kids and going from operator overseas to where everything was about me and fighting the bad guys to learning how to do pigtails, make dinner, or concoct food. I wouldn't say making dinner. I don't know if that would go right, but just like having to get into school. How do I get babysitters, laundry, cleaning, like all the things that I never really had to worry about before my eyes got opened. And I was in shock. I'm like, man, what do I do here? And through this stuff, I'm realizing that the stuff overseas was easy. It was easy to run and gun. That was not a problem. This back here that took patience, empathy, emotions, feelings, listening, like getting on their levels and actually listen, putting time into someone else besides yourself, that was hard. That was very hard for me. And I had a lot of struggles figuring that piece out. And I realized is that a lot of what I started realizing, I would hear guys that I was still working with were, I got to watch the kids for a couple hours, man. So, you know, wish me luck. I'm like, dude, shut up. I would hear that because I remember saying this stuff. Like, I got to watch kids for a couple hours by myself. My wife's going to go get her nails done or something. I'm like, dude, shut up. Like, be thankful that you get to spend that time with your kids one-on-one, like your dad, you know, dad, daughter, dad, son time. Like that's so, we take this stuff for granted. We're like, we're just kind of like business partners. Like we're in this house and I'm just going to do the things that you go through school and then you get out of the house. We're missing all these valuable times. These things you cannot be, get taken back. And so many guys are so stuck in their ways. And I'm saying men are stuck in their ways and they take care of themselves and they leave everything to their spouse. And that's not okay, man. And I was that guy. And, you know, after I got my awakening of having full custody of my children, all three of them, one in diapers, I'm like, man, I was looking at this completely wrong. This is not okay. Wow. And I'm like, there's so many dads out there that are just, they pay that check. I'll see you every other weekend, the weekend warrior fathers. And that's just not good enough. I'm sorry. It's just not. I mean, if that's how it's legally set up and, you know, the other party won't let you see them, then obviously that's the card you have and maybe you should work for something. But a lot of these situations, you can choose to go get your kid and go take them out to dinner. You can choose to take them to their baseball game. You can do these things, but people won't do it. They're like, they kind of fall into their laziness of life and like, the kids are good. I'm paying my money. I'm good. And I'm calling you all out. That's not all right. That's not okay. If you can be engaged here, I don't care what you pay. You should be engaged in your child's life because it's not about the spouse that you divorced. It is about the children, not you, not the other party. It's about the kids. Take yourself out of the freaking equation. And we get so self-absorbed in it and we're screwing up our kids. And that is the fallout of the society we see today. They don't have dad. They don't have it. And they have no one to lead, to teach them how to lead. And it's not okay. I'm very passionate about this piece because it's not okay. There's a lot of dudes that I want to lovingly grab by the throat and have a conversation with. But yeah, we're failing as men in this country.
You know, I was in Florida this past week and you know, it's becoming well known that our next conference is going to be at the Gaylord Palms, April 29th through May 3rd of 2024. But I had to go down and look at the event center. So I brought two of my four kids. I couldn't take four by myself. Their mother did not want to go. She had other things, other obligations. So I said, well, just take two. I mean, take these two. The oldest one didn't want to go. And the little one, she's just too little for Florida. Mm-hmm. Dude, it's tough, right? We're going to Universal and SeaWorld. It's 100 degrees out. She's three right. and a half. You know what I mean? Like, these two were troopers and I got 5-6 hours out of them every day. And by the end of the day, like you would have thought we were like walking through the Mojave Desert, stopping and taking breaks. They were seeing mirages. Right. But I have these moments as a dad where it's, you'd be surprised when I get emotional, being at SeaWorld and watching the dolphin show with my kids in the audience and like their amazement of the dolphin show. And Bra's getting like, fuck it. I'm glad I had sunglasses on. I was getting teared up. And it's just, I got teary-eyed 2 months ago at a fucking monster truck rally, you know, because here I am, my three kids, my three oldest. And what a cool dad thing to do with them is to bring them to a monster truck show. And as monster trucks come out, they get on their seats like, holy shit, dad. And I'm like, I know that dude just flipped the fucking machine. Right. Like, we're just like having this great bro moment.
Correct.
Like that. Yeah. You know, I just, people don't realize this preciousness. And I am going to say one more thing. There's a guy that I know, and I don't really want to, I don't have the liberty or the blessing to say his daughter's name or his name, but he's a cop here, and his daughter had been struggling with terminal cancer. And, you know, I was donating, keeping abreast of things, and out of nowhere, well, right before I went to Florida, he posted that, and I got the GoFundMe notification that she had not made it. She had passed away, and she's a very young kid, you know, and dude, I'm not lying to you. I was literally sitting there crying, sobbing. And I've never met her. I may have met him once. I'm just fucking, I'm getting emotional about it now. So when people think that they don't need to spend that quality time with your kids, I just want to emphasize that I'm sure that he would have given his life in a second, but would give anything in the world to have just a few more moments. You don't want to have those regrets as a parent. It, you know, I know a girl right now. She's like, oh, I'm going to see my grandparents tomorrow. I said, that's wonderful. I go, please cherish every moment with them and call them more than you do. Call them two or three more times a week and just constantly talk to them and tell them that you love them. Because I got to tell you, dude, there's nothing I want more in this world than to spend one more day with my grandmother. And I could have, but I didn't, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I was close to my grandmother, right? Like I was calling, I call my grandmother three, four times a week. I could have went and spent an extra day with her a month. And I should have. She was the best human being I ever knew in my life. And I took it for granted. And I don't want you to make the same mistake because you can't have that back once it's gone. It's mm-hmm. just like kids. So I remember, Eddie, what I was saying about my neighbor, Paul. And I've said this story before, but years ago, when we started this podcast, when I first had my kids, I moved into my house 5.5 years ago. My neighbor, Paul, said, you know, I've been working like 100 hours a week since I'm fucking like 16. He had kids very young, 18, he had kids. He goes, I'm not working as much as I once did, and I'm going to sell some of the bagel stores. I go, why is that? He goes, dude, I missed their whole life. I wasn't here for anything, dude. I missed their whole fucking life. He goes, and it wasn't worth it. He goes, I have some success. He goes, but I could have dialed it back 10, 20 hours and still been pretty close to where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that. We have people come on, they want to know about the business. I go, listen, guys, I could get 20% more out of street cop training. I promise you that from the entrepreneurship side of it, you know, but I'm not willing to fucking forfeit and pay the price of not being there for my kids. Mm-hmm. Take them to BJJ like three times a week. Dude, I fucking love watching these kids fucking fight. It like literally makes my day to watch these kids gee up and fucking and fight each other. It just makes me so goddamn happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, by the way, people are like, hey, you have this at, I'm like, yeah, I don't have that at that. This BJJ time. Sorry. Like I'll catch up to it later on. And sometimes I got to work during BJJ.
Mm-hmm.
Other parents are chopping up, shooting the shit. I've been there working, but I'm there and I get to fucking view 7 minutes of cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I only get to see 53, I gotta be working. It's just, but they know that their dad's ready to take them and anything they need, but I don't want to. Let me talk to you about this a little bit. How did your first marriage start and how did it end?
I mean, I was definitely very young. I was 18 when it started. I mean, I would call it young love. I don't know if that's kind of a cop-out, but yeah, I don't know, man. It just seemed like the right thing to do. Like, hey, you know, I was in the Marines. I'm going to get, she was attractive. I was like, had feelings for her. We get married. There were so many red flags now that I look back and like, probably shouldn't have done that. But
yeah,
but, and I'm sure she had some as well. But you know, just at the end was just a slow tormenting death. And a lot of it was my career. Cause I was focused on me. I'm definitely a huge reason for it all falling apart. I didn't want any more. I wanted to be single, wanted to be alone. I didn't want to have to answer to anyone. I just wanted to focus on my job, and that's with kids. I mean, I like pretty much turn my back on my children. You know, but like I'll pay, you know, the money. But I was, like I said before, I was like, I'm the biggest hypocrite, is I just failed. I was failing as a father. I was an amazing operator. That doesn't mean anything. Like, I thought I was the man. That's not a man. A man is a guy that can step up and take care of his family. That's a man. I was not a man. I was a little boy. And I learned that when I got my kids. And I knew nothing. But you know, where it starts, where it ends are two different things. But I mean, it was just it was getting very toxic. It was getting physically abusive from one side to the other, emotionally abused. Like, my words were like swords, and then would prompt the physical piece. So it just wasn't a good place. And, you know, I'm totally, my kids, I have good relationships with all my children. I'm still repairing some for my two oldest daughters, just because of like learning how to be a dad. It was very militaristic, and not really having the feelings like I mentioned earlier. But, you know, much better with my kids now. And then I've got two stepchildren too, which is like totally different because I'm more mature emotionally than I was back then. But, you know, the starting point is like, I guess anyone, like, yeah, that seems like the right thing to do, right? And then the end was just like, it was a slow, tormenting death. And the career was not, the SEAL life was not helping. But there's plenty of guys that have done the job and kept their family intact and were men and did a great job. And most of those guys were, you know, they looked to Christ to do that. And that's one thing I learned, is that I was not doing it all. And that kind of is the pinnacle of me, is, you know, finding my faith and turning things around, like, hey, this is not who I want to be anymore. So that was, you know, kind of my switch.
You know, at the end of your first marriage, it sounds like it wasn't a fun split.
No.
Has there been a time where you offered up apologies to your wife after the fact, if it's all settled? And do you guys have any kind of relationship, your first wife and you?
I absolutely apologize for my actions and being a turd. I have apologized.
Has she forgiven you?
Yes, I believe so. According to Matt, what she does in the head is that's on her. But I think so. I apologize, or, you know, forgave her for all of, you know, what I thought I saw and all that stuff. But that's water under the bridge, man. Focus right now is on the marriage that I'm now. She's remarried, so that's good. I'm happy for her. I wish her the best, nothing but the best, because that's my kid's mother. But, you know, focusing on my relationship, it's like the best, man. I just, like, it's like you look back, you're like, man, I can't believe all that happened, but it gets you to where you are today. And I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful with my wife that I have now. It just feels like home.
You ever have a sit down moment with your kids, the older ones, and say like, hey, look, I got some things to explain to you. And how did they receive that?
Well, yeah, well, two oldest have read the book Unafraid. So it's kind of laid out pretty much in there. And before that came out, they would engage me. And I really didn't tell them too much about it. I kept it away, because some of it's pretty rough to hear, because they're involved in a lot of it. And from what I understand, their mother told them some stuff, and then I just kind of would verify, like, actually. And then grandparents would chime in with their stuff. But once I read the book, they're like, oh my gosh, like, I had no clue. I'm like, yeah. So, you know, like, take it to the Lord, see what he gives you. But it was rough. It was rough, because I'm like, man, I was a turd. I was a turd. I was a turd, a big one. I was a piece of crap, man. I'm fully aware of that. And I'm fully aware that I'm never going to go back to that either.
Well, I think that there are probably people listening to this podcast, and, you know, even though it's a street cop podcast, it's the military tier one operator. This is not other shows where, by the way, I'm not knocking other shows. I think they do fantastic jobs of going there. The war story, I think it's fucking phenomenal. I'm a fan of those shows. This show's a tad different because we go to places like this. How old were your daughters when you started making the transition into being a good dad, or at least the attempt to be a good dad?
Man,
when your two oldest are girls, right?
Yeah. So when I got them, like, got custody of them, 10, 5, and my son was 10 months. So that's when I got them. When I actually
started, full custody or half custody?
Full. Like, they were living with me all the time. Their mother would see them maybe 2 or 3 weeks, minus the summer, maybe 2 weeks during the school year. Maybe they're with me the whole time. And then in the summer, she had them for almost the full summer. Then it started shrinking as time went on. They wanted to kind of stay back.
That must have been hard, dude, huh?
Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, you're like, if you're looking at it, like, where's mom? You know what I mean? And then I've got other women coming in or other relationships. It's just a mess, man. It was a mess. I'd say, to be honest with you, dude, I'd say probably the last 2 or 3 years has been like we're thinking, and every child's a little different. My middle daughter, Samantha, I'd say probably the last 2 or 3 years has gotten better. My oldest daughter, we've always had a good relationship. And then my son, he still lives with us. We've always been solid. But my middle daughter went through some crap just like based off the age, the stuff that went on. And I've had to apologize numerous times. We've had a lot of cry fest. I'm about to do it right now. On the phone, like just apologizing. But it's a work of progress, man. It's just like, it's constant. And I still today want to go back and change and do things. I know I can't. All I can worry about is today and like what I'm going to be doing in the future. I'm very proud of those kids. They saved my life and, you know, getting me out of operationally and being a dad. But it was, I mean, recently, man, 2-3 years, dude, to where I was like, actually, okay, I'm starting to get the hang of this. It took me a long, long time to understand, like quit looking at yourself. And I was talking to me, like quit looking at yourself. It's them. It's about them. It's not about you.
Do you think they've forgiven you 100%?
I do. Yeah, I do.
It's great.
I do.
It's good, dude. It's a good place to be now, huh?
Yeah, it is. We have great relationships now, but it's still it rears its head, man. It's like, God, what was I, dude? Yeah, what was I doing?
You know, maybe you just have to surrender to the idea that we aren't perfect. You went down a different road that most people don't. And these are some of the repercussions that you are not able to be in control of. I mean, dude, you know, we become products of our environment. We don't have perspective. We lack perspective. We weren't raised with perspective. You know, so you gotta, I would you say that you've forgiven yourself as well?
Yes, I have. I have.
It's important.
I still have my mornings when I'm doing my reading time where I'm like, all right, let's hit this up again. Because it comes up. I mean, I'm sure you know, like, you know, something, you know, resurfaces. It's like, ooh, let's deal with this one again. It's just an ongoing process. But yeah, I'm good where the road is taking me right now and getting off focus on me and focusing on others. That's a good feeling.
With that being said, tell me about your new marriage. Like, how did that work out? How'd you meet her? And how has the transition, like, was it a good thing that she had kids already? She was able to relate to you. Mm-hmm. How did you know this one was going to be a good one? Tell me about shit like that.
Mm-hmm. We met in the gym and I was breaking off a relationship. She was going through a divorce and we were friends for a couple of years, strictly friends. And it was actually the only girl that I've ever been with. Or there was no physical stuff whatsoever. It was like literally 2 years just seeing each other. Then we ended up start working out when relationships were cut off. And man, we just like hit it off. Like she just had the sense of humor. She was just funny. I mean, she's hilarious. And we just had similar interests. And we just kind of, she had 2 children. At the time I had 2 living with me. And then we just kind of blended and it was good that she had children because she wasn't like, she knew what she was doing. Like my kids, I always wanted my kids to have a mother figure, a respectable mother figure. And that really never helped them out a lot based off of like just me still being a child causing turmoil and just not finding, I guess, the right one. But this one's like been totally different. They look at her as their mother now. She does all the things, whatever, you know, a mom's supposed to be doing or expects to do and more. And man, it's been a challenge with the blending because you're taking, you know, her stuff, my stuff, bring them together with how to parent kids. And it's that's where the Parenting with Love and Logic, we both read that one on how to do better and kind of figure out the children's like love languages, how they like, can interact with each other, how they react to certain ways you talk to them and how to communicate with them. But it's been a challenge, but it's been awesome. I mean, where we are now, obviously, versus, you know, 2 years ago, two different places, but we still have our challenges. We've got to work through things, and we're still kind of putting the icing on the cake to do that blending piece. But it's awesome, man. I'm very happy. And, you know, the kids love her and she loves them. And that's really all that matters.
I'm actually making sure I have it on Audible. I don't want to miss that book out.
It's a good book, man. It's good.
Yeah. No, people sometimes give me books and are like a week later, like, hey, did you ever, or like a month later, like, yo, did you ever get to that book? And I'm like, I finished it in 3 days. You know what I mean? Like I try to get these things out. I'm just an education sponge. How does your relationship now differ from the one you had before? And I guess to the kicker on that is, like, tell me about what it means to unconditionally love another human being who's not your children.
I guess the relationship now is there's respect. There is the want to get better. There is want to, once my stuff is called out, okay, I need to fix that. Versus like, hey, it's you, it's not me. Because I've got a lot of crap, and it's just working through that together, learning how to communicate effectively together. And then, you know, to be honest with you, on the children piece that aren't yours, it's changed. Like at first, it's like, I want to love you exactly the same, but the truth be told, what I've learned is that it's not the same. Like, that is my blood. It is not the same. Doesn't mean that I don't love them. It's just, there's just something different. But I've realized over the couple of years, it kind of like mold in to where it's like, man, that's like, don't mess with my kids. Like, it went from those are my stepkids, now those are my kids, like when we're out or whatever. But I can just tell the change, and it's pretty crazy, man. It's freaking gnarly, the change of it. I mean, got relationships with them just as I do as my other kids. It's pretty cool. But it took work. And I think at the beginning, I was taking things personally. Like if they said something bad, I'm like, what would you say? Like, but that, like, dude, they're kids. Like we just talked about, like, they're kids. And I had to like put that aside. Like, dude, quit taking stuff personally, focus on what they're doing. A lot of these kids at certain ages is they have to act out what they're feeling, 'cause they don't know the words, they don't know how to describe what they're feeling. And once I heard that, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. Like, why do they throw a temper tantrum? 'Cause they don't know the words to say, like, hey, I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling unheard, or whatever it is. But it's been, the process is cool, dude. It's just like by osmosis, man. Just everyone's jiving. I mean, we still have our struggles. There's sometimes I honestly want to put a huge explosive in my house and leave. That's not true. That was figuratively speaking. But it's like, it's not all strawberry fields. It's not. I mean, we still struggle. We still have to deal with things, and we have our bouts, but we move through it and we get stronger.
I usually, when things start to erupt, just try to disengage and take a different approach to it, you know, with my kids, namely. So
yeah.
What I'll do is I'll try to take everything into laughing. You know, it's funny, when I used to want to kill them, I would just tickle them. As nuts as that sounds, like if I got like frustrated, I would just tickle the shit out of them. Right. And they, like, my kids think it's fucking hysterical. Like,
why am I bleeding? You're tickling really hard.
No, but like, dude, like they would like whenever they're acting like dicks, I just tickle them. Right. And it really, I think it speaks volumes to them on how their father handles situations, you know? And I think we said it earlier, but I don't think we touched on it. People are very confused with being physically there and mentally present. I don't think we ever addressed this. I just want to just touch on this for a second. Mm-hmm. I think about this a lot. I have a gym in my basement. I've talked about it 1,000 times. I fucking love that gym. It's the best money I've ever spent in my life. And because they're just the time saver, but also I get to spend time with my kids in that gym. So typically in the morning I work out by myself, but at night I'll bring them down and I'll just say to them, like, yo, you guys want to work out? 'Cause they're like, hey, can we do this? And I'm like, man, I got to get a workout in, right? I have to. So I integrate them. Do my kids work out with me? My kids work out on their, you know, you heard the rages, they're little. They'll be in the gym without me. I'll come home like, hey, where's this guy? Like, oh, he's working out downstairs. And I come down, dude's seven awesome. On the fucking, bro, like, I'm telling you, I got videos of it. Like, legit, I'm like, yeah, what do you got going on? He's like, yeah, he's like, I'm doing dips right now. 7 years old, first grade, right? I'm going to hit core a little bit. And then I'm going to hit dumbbells. And dude, you know, you watch, they almost like, it's kind of silly, all right? But mm-hmm. You know, when I tell people this, I go, their father doesn't come home. And people say, well, you travel. Yeah, I have no choice. But I'm constantly in touch with them for a day or two that I'm gone. Their father, when he comes home, is present. Like, I don't come home, grab a beer and watch the baseball game and ignore them and tell them to keep it quiet. Mm-hmm. Dude, I just don't. You know, I just don't do that. It's their time. Whatever they want to watch, whatever they want to do, it's their decision and I'm with it. Right? I make suggestions at times. Mm-hmm. But I don't, and I watch these motherfuckers get confused on what it means to be a present dad, right? You know, like, are you, because your kids are there and you're there, you think you're that present? Like, I'll give you some credit. Yeah. Okay. But you know what it means to be a present dad and be involved, you know, with these kids?
Of course. It's what you kind of said, what they want to do, not what you want to do, getting on their level and kind of getting into their world, which is different for each child. And I struggle with that sometimes. Like, I've got to like make sure like I do a new thing as I try to let's get everyone to do like Uno or something around the table, because it's something where everyone can do it together, keep engaged, go to the creeks together. It's to do the things that they want to do, not what I want to do, because I used to do that all the time. Let's watch this. Let's watch a movie. How about this one? Like, let's watch Iron Man for the 56th time. but it's like, yeah, you got to be present. And personally, it is hard sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, I want to do anything but this. I got so much work to do. I got to go do this. I don't feel up for it. I'm tired or I'm starving. But it's like, dude, even if it's just 10 minutes getting on their level, doing whatever they want to do, even that's like the base. Dude, that makes all the difference in the world. They don't know what 10 minutes are. They think it's a world. Get down there, play dolls, build Legos, whatever it may be, draw something with them, all kinds of stuff. But now we our upstairs where all the kids are, there's like ants, frogs, snakes. They like go catch them and they like, there's like crap everywhere. I'm like, I don't even know what's going on in this house. It's a zoo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been curtailing the fucking zoo at my house in that sense. But, you know, dude, I really try to emphasize being very thoughtful. I have one here with me today. They all wanted to come to the office. You know, it just means the world. They come here. There's not much to do. We have a big office, but we're busy. You know, we get 19 fucking full-time employees here. Mm-hmm. And everybody has a relationship with my kids. And one which actually just peeked into the podcast studio, crawled under, the 7-year-old. He's here today. They all want to come and I just couldn't take all of them. I'm like, well, you'll come the next day and then you'll come the next day. And sometimes I can take two of them here, but you know, I do the best that I can do with what I have. And I think that's a real, I'm proud to say that I don't have many moments as a dad that I'm ashamed of, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. Yeah. And I think about that a lot and I want to not peacock or brag about that. I want to set an example for people to hear that and to know what it means to consciously be a great father and a great husband. Mm-hmm. And how important, and sometimes that shit backfires on you too.
It's not easy all the time, man. It's sometimes hard. Like sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, it's worth it though.
It is. You're right.
Well, listen, man, I don't think any more time. This is a fucking badass podcast. I had a good time.
I appreciate you having me on, man. I really do.
Now I'm glad we got to go where we went, dude. I think people were just like tier one operator, Navy SEALs, just SEAL talking team about parenting. But you know, you take it from a guy who you wouldn't expect to open up and be so vulnerable about the other side of shit outside of the stories of fucking the things that we appreciate so much, bro. Like before we go, I just want to say, like, I'm sure you hear it a lot and it gets numb after a while, but I can't emphasize how much it means to me for you to had gone through what you went through, even though it was a rise for you and you enjoyed it. But I know a lot of it was fucked up now that I have so many fucking friends. And, you know, cops and military are pretty much intertwined. Half the cops in America were military guys and girls. Most of the guys and girls that I worked with were literally Afghanistan and Iraq war veterans, because I came on in 01. That's when shit was kicking off. Guys and girls were coming back. Veterans preference, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, 08. We had almost everybody coming back was a veteran, and coming to the police department was a veteran. So, you know, dude, I'm very much aware, but dude, I'm so appreciative. Like, people are like, oh, thank you for your service as a cop. I'm like, you know, I get it. Like, yeah, but this is a different level. I watch people get deployed all the time, dude, and what the toll it took on motherfuckers. Right. I just like, you know, you're coming in one day and then like your boy's calling you and you're like, yo, I'm getting orders. Like your partner's like, I'm getting orders. I'm like, what does that mean? Like I'm going out for like 9 months. And I'm like, dude, you just had a kid. Like, yeah, I fucking know, dude.
They don't care.
Right. Like, you know, I know. And like people don't understand. Like, think about what you sacrifice and how you're having to try to rebuild your life after what you did. And dude, you were the, you know, you were top tier, tier one, elitist of the elite. And, you know, I don't think that we really understand the how much you really left out there and the things you had to endure and see. And man, I can't thank you enough.
I appreciate it, man. It was an honor to do it. Hands down, it wouldn't change anything besides the parenting piece.
Yeah, no, I get it. But dude, like, I think that that allowed you to write that book and be there for other people. Dude, I went through something very difficult and getting close to the reveal of what that was in 21 and 22. It brought me to my fucking knees, essentially. And, you know, I got to tell you, going through that has already helped me help a lot of people. You know, so as rough as it was, and I pray that I never have to go through things like that again, I am proud to say that I'm able to guide others going through it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's awesome. It's always about helping others. It's, the feeling is just, it's insane. It's so cool.
Listen, dude, it was great, man. Hopefully you want to come back on one day. We'll do this shit again. This was fucking legit. We can change topics and go into fucking smoking bad guys.
There you go.
So, but anyway, dude, listen, have a great rest of the year. And we will put together something soon and do this shit. This
you
great,
as well, dude. Bro. Really you good. Be safe, man. And keep taking care of those kids, dude.
Thanks, brother. I'll see you.
All right, bye.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.